Episode 8, Feeling Free. It's mid-December and the Christmas cards have been arriving thick and fast. I'm not one for Christmas and birthdays. I'm not one for fuss in general, but I must admit the 31 cards that I received that Christmas were really appreciated. Every single one of them. They really made me feel that I was in people's thoughts. It was like a continuation of the funeral. That gave me a real warmth inside. About 10 days before Christmas, I bought 3 card hangers, the long Velcro strips that you hang vertically on the wall, along with a heavy-duty Velcro sticky tab that goes on the back of each card. I hung them at the far end of the through room, by the dining table. They looked neat and tidy, each card overlapping the one above. I went into the loft and dragged out the Christmas tree and decorations. This was Julie's thing, not mine. She was so good at decorating a tree. She'd do it perfectly. I'd always tell her how nice it looked. Over the years, we'd bought tree decorations from New York, Boston, Prague, Bruges, Zagreb, and a few other places to remind ourselves of our travels and the happy memories we had there. It was up to me now. The whole thing seemed a little daunting. Peculiar even that this was my job in the future. A real reminder that Julie wasn't here now and wouldn't be anymore. I cracked on with the tree and had it finished a lot quicker than I expected. It looked half decent, nowhere near as good as Julie would do it, but generally I was really happy with myself. The family now knew about my plans to take Julie's ashes to New York and scatter them in Central Park. I felt that there was mixed emotions with a couple of people opposed to the plan. One in particular. I had to remind people that I would be happy leaving them where they are, but I know that the final destination needs to be New York. It's hard trying to make people understand, as I've had to tell them that I've never discussed it with Julie, but I know that this is what she wants. I'm absolutely sure of it. It's easy to understand people's concerns when they don't believe spiritually or are sceptical regarding my abilities to read the signs. It must seem totally alien to them, absolute and utter nonsense. My visions are not wrong when the same scenario is played over and over again in my mind. Near Christmas, at a family gathering, one family member makes a particular exception to the final resting place of the ashes. I'm quite annoyed by the timing. This is the first Christmas without Julie and things were a little delicate to say the least. I understand people's feelings, so I reiterate to them, it's not about me or them, it's about Julie. I'm not going to go and back down due to pressure. I'm not going to let Julie down, that's just not going to happen. I arrive home from the family do, just before midnight. I make myself some toast and a cup of tea, and I sit in Julie's seat on the couch. The events of the night are still swirling round in my head. I sit thinking about the altercation. I'm really not happy. Not happy that it was dragged up at the first family gathering. Within a minute of me sitting there, I hear a loud bang. It startled me. It came from the far end of the room. It sounds as if one of the Velcro strips has fell off the wall, dragging all the cards with it. I glance over. All 3 strips are still on the wall. I walk over to the dining room table to find one of the cards missing from one of the strips. The 3rd card from the bottom. It's on the wooden floor. I reach under the table to retrieve the card. Whose card is it? The family member I've just had the altercation with. I put the card back in place, sit down and consider the evidence. That was definitely a sign. That's a 1 in 31 chance that that particular card would fall, never mind the timing, just as I sat down with the altercation fresh in my mind. Those cards have been hung up for over a week and none of them have fallen off. And I was later to find out it was the only one to fall in the 20 days that the cards were up. Directly below the cards is a double radiator. And when the dining room table isn't in use, which it wasn't, it's pushed right up against the radiator. How did that card miss the radiator and then get through the tiny 2-inch gap without hitting either of them? And how did it make such a loud bang as if it had been hit on the floor with force while stood up on its edge? No, this was a clear sign from Julie. The sign said, don't listen to the family. If it was a sign saying she didn't want her ashes scattering in New York, then she would have given a different sign. Like when I got home, I would have found the card placed next to Julie's picture. Or a little white feather would have been wedged in the card. Or I would have seen a butterfly land on the card. Or something calm and peaceful like that. But this was very abrupt, to say the least. I say out loud to Julie, if you don't want to go to New York, you need to tell me. Show me a sign if you don't want to go. This is a make or break decision. There's no going back once the ashes are scattered, and that particular family member is putting slight doubts in my mind. I have to keep to my beliefs. I know it's right. I know this is what Julie wants. I wouldn't get the visions otherwise, but I understand the concerns of the family. Most won't be able to visit New York to the final resting place, but this is what Julie wants, and by hook or by crook, that's what she'll get. I'm off on another trip. I'm going back to Drumnadrochit with my son, daughter and daughter's fiancé. I bought the same apartment. It's February now, so I'll be there for my birthday. I hate fuss, and this year I just want my birthday over and done with. Once there, we all have the same feeling. The apartment feels like home. We all settle in so well. We do the same hikes that I did first time, and on the fourth day it snows, which gives the place a lovely feel. My son and I hike on the Great Glen Way. It was a very fast and energetic hike to the top where the snow was thick. It was a really good workout and a test of fitness, and it was good just having that time with him. Just the two of us. A real bonding moment, I felt. The following day was Friday, my birthday. I felt a great sadness that morning and had to go in the bathroom to have some time to myself. I'd arranged with the others that I would drop them off in Inverness for the day, as I needed time on my own to go hiking, gather my thoughts and talk to Julie. I went back to Alt na Cruach. The forest looks so different when it snows, and reaching the top you find a wild snow-capped landscape. I felt alive again. Free. Freely talking to Julie. The place was all mine. I passed only one hiker with his dog while I was there. I'm so glad I've had this time with Julie and nature. I head back to the apartment for a shower, get changed and go to meet the others in Inverness for dinner. They're all a little worse for wear by the time I meet them in the early evening. They've really enjoyed themselves. It's so good to see. The following day, my son and I go to visit the castle located about 5 minutes' drive away. It's a lovely location right on the shores of Loch Ness. Afterwards, we travel 30 minutes south to Fort Augustus. On the way, we pick up a hitchhiker. In the two trips to Drumnadrochit and all the travelling I'd done around the loch and the surrounding areas, this is the first person I'd seen hitchhiking. It's also the first time that there's only been two of us, and therefore there's room in the car. So I pull over. I ask where he's going. Fort Augustus, he says. That's where we're going. Jump in. En route, we find that Nick, in his late 60s, is from Hampshire, and has hiked around 25 kilometres along the Great Glen Way to where we found him. And the bus that was due to take him back to Fort Augustus hasn't turned up. He'd been waiting over an hour and started to get really cold. He told us that he'd been coming regularly to Scotland climbing for the best part of 50 years. My son's eyes lit up. He'd been climbing for a couple of years by then and was intrigued. Nick said, if you're into climbing, then you've got to go to the Isle of Skye in the Coolin Mountains. I asked Nick where was the best place he'd been climbing. The Dolomite Mountains in northern Italy, he said. That's funny, I thought, as I'd looked extensively into both those locations recently. We dropped Nick off after thoroughly enjoying his company. I turned to my son and said, there was a reason we picked Nick up. He wasn't convinced, but suddenly My next destination was calling me, the Isle of Skye. The following day on the drive home with my son, I knew his experience in Scotland was going to kickstart his life again. I was surprised he came in the first place and was even more surprised by how calm he'd been and how much he'd enjoyed the experience. While I was driving through Scotland, passing the glorious views of the mountains, a sudden voice entered my head. "You're now ready to go back to work," it said. I'd done the odd job for close friends since Julia died. I'd actually started a job just before going to Scotland, but really, I hadn't worked for 6 months now. I thought about it for a minute. Yes, I am ready to go back. And not only was I ready, I was actually looking forward to going back to work. Looking forward to work is something that had never happened before. I'd always worked hard as a self-employed joiner, normally 6 days a week, and even though I didn't mind it, I never really enjoyed it or looked forward to working. The emotional control when playing one of Julie's songs on my playlist was at a stage where I'd started to smile while reminiscing instead of getting upset. I was pretty much in control by early March, but on my first day back to work, that all changed. I was coming off the motorway on the slip road when one of Julie's songs played and I instantly broke down. The job at the block of apartments was less than 5 minutes away and I was in bits. As I drove off the main road and turned into the car park, I was still desperately trying to control my emotions, wiping tears from my eyes. I parked in the customer's designated parking spot, which was right by the front door. Directly in front of me was a small bush, and behind was a round table that one of the tenants had put there, with a woman sat having a cup of coffee. It was a nice day, but the car park was in total shade by the area where the lady was sat, which was bright with sunshine. I sat in my van composing myself. I'd seen the lady and didn't want to look upset as I passed her. I said hello to her as I passed carrying my tool bag. Within 5 minutes of starting the job, I was back down at the van to get some more tools. As I passed, I said to the lady, "Nice day to be sat outside." She instantly sprung up like a jack-in-the-box, full of the joys of spring. She was stood in the bright sunshine and believe me, she was a ray of light. Her energy was amazing and she had that something that I just can't put my finger on it. We spoke for nearly an hour. I told her I'd been to Scotland where it had been snowing. She said that this was the first nice day in ages, as there'd been heavy storms and she'd been waiting for a nice day to sit outside with a coffee. I told her about Julie and the reasons for going to Scotland and that I'd never be with anybody else. She was a nurse, very bubbly, and I can only describe her as the salt of the earth. It was enlightening talking to her. She reignited something inside me that day, something that had died along with Julie. I was recovering extremely well up to that point, but there was something that I still couldn't get my head round. A vision that kept entering my mind. It'd been happening for a while now. It was a vision of me stood outside the prison gates looking in. The 40 years on my own, the double life sentence. 1 minute I'd get my head round it and the next I couldn't. Within 8 hours of meeting this lady, my thoughts had turned full circle. From the morning stating that I'd never be with anybody else to the evening saying, yes, I will be with somebody else. I've got far too much to give to just let it all go to waste. I went home and I knew what I was saying was right because when I went up to Julie's photo and spoke to her regarding my thoughts, I felt totally at ease. There was no guilt. I could look her in the eye. This was the make or break point in my recovery, the leap of faith, the next stage, a new life. Though all my family and friends had been a big part in my recovery through the love and understanding that they'd shown me, the words of wisdom of three people have really made the difference. Nikki at Julie's Works, Alva, my therapist, but the best piece of advice I was given was by my sister-in-law. It painted the picture and made total sense from the word go. People kept telling me that time was a healer. If your sibling, parent, relative or friend dies, I could understand that. You would slowly come to terms with it and eventually carry on with your life. But when you lose a child, especially if they're young, or your long-term partner who basically is part of you, then that doesn't apply if you intend to stand up straight again. The pain from the loss is far too great for it just to right itself. My sister-in-law was in the same boat as me when my brother suddenly died aged 35. She was left with three young children. When I mentioned how time was a healer didn't ring true to me, she said, "Don't listen to them, Phil. Time is not a healer. That was your old life and this is your new one. Now get used to it." This made total sense. A picture formed in my mind of me ripping out the pages of a book and writing on a fresh page. The old life was gone. This was my new life. And now my mind kept relaying an unimaginable thought that I would be with somebody else. After making a decision to be in a new relationship, the vision of the prison gates never returned. Was the vision saying, "Don't imprison yourself"? Maybe, but one thing I do know was that 40-year double life sentence was gone. I felt as if a huge weight had been lifted from my shoulders, that the path ahead was clear. I really wasn't in any rush to be with somebody else. In truth, it was quite a scary proposition, but I'd made the massive decision not to be alone, and now I had to do things the right way and show respect to everybody, including myself. The thought of being with somebody else was bizarre. There was no excitement, just relief. Relief that I'd made a decision. I'd been with the same person for 29 years. I never thought or ever wanted to be with anybody else. And in truth, if somebody had made the decision I just had, only 7 months after the love of their life had died, then I would have been the first to slag them off. I would have never have understood how somebody could consider such a thing. And you'd never understand unless you've been put in this position. Unless you feel that sickening sorrow, that total loneliness, that utter confusion. I do believe if I would have been 10 years older, I might not have felt the same way regarding a new relationship. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I'll never know. I knew that Julie would want me to move forward with somebody new. She'd want the best for me. Why am I so sure of that? Or am I just appeasing myself to justify my decision? When Julie was alive, the last thing I ever wanted was to lose her. The thought of not being with her was unthinkable, yet when she was dying, I wanted her to go as quickly as possible. If I was given the choice of her dying there and then, without any time to say goodbye, or to live another 6 months in discomfort, then without hesitation, I'm choosing the first option. And if I was given the chance to take her place, I would have gladly have done that. When you love somebody dearly, you only want the best for them. If Julie didn't love me, then she would have just left me to cope with the bereavement on my own. All the signs she sent have helped me tremendously. Without them, I would have really struggled. They were a real sign of love towards me and a helping hand to make sure I could live again. Why would she do that if she didn't want me to live life to the full? There were a handful of other questions I needed to ask myself, and I also had the task of informing the family of my decision. I also had a date with two ladies to look forward to, both for different reasons.